included in the digestive process, if the body is having problems there, if there's dental involvement, in the section we made a tape on dental involvement, the temporal mandibular joint can be tested. If we don't masticate properly, if we don't chew our food, if there's something that's not quite right, we can create a real problem. Chewing is the most significant protection we start with in preventing the absorption of parasites. So if we're not chewing our food properly and mixing it properly with the enzymes that come through the salivary glands, we can set in place a number of problems that take a whole bunch of help from the rest of the body. The next organ that's on there is the parotid gland. The parotid gland is a salivary organ that's tied also to lymphatic drainage. It can be impacted by toxins. This is where we get the mumps. If there's an infectious agent there or a problem there, that should be addressed. If it's out of balance, if the parotid gland's not functioning properly, we might not digest our foods correctly and parasites can be involved. It's important to note that if the parotid gland is out of balance, somewhere down the road eventually you'll find an imbalance in the gallbladder. There's a strong connection between the parotid gland and the gallbladder. The parotid gland is located in the at the corner of the jaw, basically. It's quite a large organ. Go to the corner of your jaw, right where the maxillary point is, move your jaw back and forth, and the parotid gland is a big organ that sits right on the corner on the outside of your jaw. We talked about stomach and stomach acid. The intrinsic factor is the capacity of the body to absorb B vitamins. And now we're ready to begin our discussion in the digestive section relative to the liver. But as you can see, the liver is not exclusive to digestion. It has a role to play in the immune system also. And if we really wanted to, we could put it in the lymphatic system too. Next up, the liver. Well, the liver is probably the largest and one of the most significant organs of the body. Each cell in the liver has about 500 functions in two unique categories. The liver is divided into two processes. One is the production of bile for digestion, and the other is hepatic or blood cleansing. What a unique organ this is. If we were to eliminate 80% of the liver, if everything else was healthy, it would completely regenerate itself in about 3 months. Even though the organ accounts for about 3% of the body's weight, it contributes to 12% of the body's metabolism. It's capable of storing, increasing the amount of blood that it stores about 400%, and under certain circumstances it can serve as a blood reserve for the rest of the body. The food particles that it are required to digest on the bile side are delivered through a portal vein, and it's processed there over the course of several hours. And the liver selects and removes and synthesizes and detoxifies final products for digestion. If the liver is impaired, the overall well-being of the body can be influenced. But sometimes it's difficult to know that it's gone bad. It has so many processes and functions. It addresses sugars and vitamins, toxins, bacteria, bile and fats, proteins and hormones. And oftentimes by the time it is impaired, toxins are dumping back into the body and you could easily be dead. If you don't know what's going on and if somebody's really sick and you can't figure out anything else, the first place to test, the first place to support, the first place to clear is the liver. And in part of our advanced course in defining a protocol, the very first thing we look at is lymphatic drainage and liver. The liver, if it's plugged, will be sending sludge back into the body, or the toxins it can't eliminate back into the body. The liver is a chemical mill that, in which compounds are burned and altered. They're corrected and broken down. They're synthesized. Enzymes are used and excreted to make our food a usable product, to eliminate toxins, to protect against bacteria. The liver also stores glucose as glycogen. Glycogen is storage is maximal and minimal at certain times of the night. It's maximal at midnight and minimal at noon. And we'll talk about the time the liver is active when we talk about the Chinese model. Some of the symptoms of the and imbalances from the liver that would be important to look at are what we will address next. I mentioned in addressing somebody that's sick, if you don't know what's going on, go make sure the liver is functioning properly, and many times you'll take care of some of the most significant things. Here are some elements that could be important relative to liver dysfunction. If there's a dull pressure or a feeling of fullness in the right quadrant of the abdomen, people that can't lay on their right side, the liver is active between 1 and 3 a.m., and so if they're falling asleep and then waking up at that point in time, that could be tied to the liver. Migraine headaches are tied to the allergy imbalances of the body and the liver's incapacity to deal with those. The sense organ of the liver is the eyes, and it's really amazing how many problems with eyes can be cleared by balancing the liver. Nausea, lack of appetite, or aversion to certain foods, especially fatty foods, can be an expression of imbalances. Nervousness, irritability, chronic anger, always being angry, and frustration can be the emotional pieces tied to an imbalance in the liver meridian. Hypoglycemia and the sense of hypoglycemia comes from a relationship of the liver because of its glycogen and glucose production relationships, and toxic responses to prescription and drugs often impact the liver as the body tries to eliminate toxicity from those things. Excuse me. Other things that can create imbalances in the liver are not just drugs and chemicals, but metals and parasites. Any poison that the body's trying to eliminate, it will try to eliminate through the liver. And if enzymes can't be produced to clear the liver, then oftentimes the peritoneum of the liver becomes the storehouse for these toxins. Other things to look for relative to conditions that might imply an imbalance in the liver or be acne and skin rashes, constipation, yellow eyes and skin, sensitivity to light again can be tied to the liver because of the eyes and their relationship. Blood disorders and hypothyroidism of all kinds can be tied to the liver. Hypertension, hemorrhoids and varicose veins, fat intolerances, bloating and abdominal problems can be tied to an imbalance with the liver. Hormonal problems and cholesterol problems can also be tied to an imbalance on the liver meridian. It has a vital role to play, again about 500 or more functions for each organ, cell of the organ. The gallbladder and the bile ducts are the next area of digestion that we want to address. They have a significant relationship. The gallbladder itself is a small organ that stores the concentrates of bile that are not used by the stomach. If the liver sends bile to the stomach and it's not sent to the stomach, it's needed for later, it is stored in the gallbladder. There are probably 500,000 people, half a million people a year, hospitalized because the bile ducts and the gallbladder don't work properly. And probably over 20% of everybody, over 20% of the people of everybody over 40 has some form of gallstones. So it's important that the bile ducts function properly. As we mentioned, the bile itself is made in the liver and then it's introduced by certain ducts to the stomach. These ducts have a total surface area of over 100 square meters, and considering that that's almost 100 times what an adult skin surface area would cover, it's about 2 square meters. The skin's about 2 square meters. The liver secretes basically about 600 to 1200 cc's of bile a day. The bile has two functions. It's designed to help break down large fat particles of the food into real minute particles that can be attacked by the pancreas lipase and enzymes there. And then the bile also aids in the transport and absorption of the digested fat end products through the intestinal mucous membranes. And secondly, the bile serves as a means of excretion for several important waste products from the blood. These include the bilirubin, which is an end product of hemoglobin destruction, and excess cholesterol made by the liver. The bile secretion is maximized right at noon and minimized about midnight. Many toxins can accumulate in the bile ducts of the liver and in the gallbladder, and can be related to chemical sensitivities, pesticides, herbicides, alcohol, prescription drugs. Bile salts are a major component of the bile ducts, and they are reabsorbed at the terminal ileum of the small intestine into the portal vein and then back to the liver for recycling. We have some significant symptoms that can be associated with an imbalance in the gallbladder and the bile ducts. If the gallbladder and bile ducts are out of balance, there can be some significant elements that provide clues for this. Symptoms that might be present: joints aching, muscle aching, yellow discoloration of the skin and eyes. Sinus congestion can be a part of this. Bloating and vomiting can be an element of that, and general fat intolerances. Constipation can be an expression of an imbalance on the gallbladder meridian, increased gas or flatulence. The bloating and belching can occur as a result of a dysfunction on the gallbladder and the bile ducts. Pain under the right rib cage going through to the back is a typical location for the bile ducts. Most people that get their gallbladders out are under the F category: fat, flatulent, 40, and female. So if you fit those categories, think about it, but those are things to be aware of in relationship to imbalances on the bile duct and gallbladder. Symptoms can result as also from chemotherapies, prescription drugs, and other things that we take. It would be important to test their biocompatibility and effectiveness. We never recommend anybody discontinuing a prescription drug, but we want to test biocompatibility of those things because they will have a distinct influence on the balance of the liver and the gallbladder and the bile ducts. Anger and frustration are emotions tied to that process. Gall and gallbladder seem to go together. Those would be the things to look for if there's possible imbalances in the gallbladder and the bile ducts. The next organ in our digestive process is the pancreas, and this is located in the left upper quadrant of the abdomen, kind of toward the back. The pancreas is responsible for producing some significant digestive enzymes and other significant functions. It secretes enzymes into a kind of a juice of a bicarbonate, and these enzymes, the protease, lipase, and amylase, break down different foods. The protease breaks down proteins, the amylase breaks down carbohydrates, and the lipase breaks down fats. These are then used to help form amino acids, fatty acids, and simple sugars, and these can then be absorbed in small amounts into a portal vein, which delivers them to the liver. The pancreas in its secretion of sodium bicarbonate acts to neutralize the acidic contents of the stomach. So the pancreas and stomach function together as the foods enter the duodenum. The total amount of fluid secreted by the pancreas each day is about 1,000 cc's or 1 liter. Basically, the pancreas' primary job is providing enzymes that control inflammation, which can occur as a result of a cut or a bruise, a food reaction, a chemical reaction, changes in temperature like heat and cold, and in responses to anger and anxiety. The other thing that we're familiar with is the production of insulin and glucagon. Insulin is produced by the beta cells of the islets of Langerhans in the pancreas, and this regulates the blood sugar uptake by the cells of the body and causes the muscles and the liver to store glucose and the responses to that storage. Some of the significant symptoms of an imbalance tied to the pancreas will be addressed next. Some of the things that can be tied to an imbalance or a dysfunction in the pancreas are listed here. The diarrhea, a bloated feeling in the abdomen, significant gas in the lower bowel, discomfort there can be an imbalance in the pancreas. Indigestion and food cravings can be implied in a part of that. Bloating after meals, fatigue after meals, sleepiness can be an expression of an imbalance in the pancreas and the pancreatic enzymes. Not listed here, but tied to it is smelly stools, foul-smelling stools can be a part of that. Pain in the lower left rib cage, puffiness. Asthma has a relationship with imbalances in the pancreatic process. Hypoglycemia, and of course the extreme expression of a pancreatic dysfunction would be diabetic condition. Emotionally, there's some significant things to be aware of. Symptoms that are expressed low self-esteem and even a sense of suicide can be tied to an imbalance in the pancreas and its relationship to the spleen. Other symptoms that we'd look for are B vitamin deficiencies, maybe even ulcers occurring are an expression of a pancreatic dysfunction. The next organ we want to address in the digestive system is the small intestine. It's one of the longest organs in the body, and its function is to complete the digestion and absorption and assimilation of nutrients. It's comprised of basically three segments, the duodenum, the jejunum, and the ileum. The duodenum is the site of most of the peptic ulcers associated with hyperacidity, and this is because that the lining of the duodenum isn't as well protected as the lining of the stomach. It's here in the duodenum that enzymes and hormones are secreted. The duodenum is also the area where food is mixed with the pancreatic enzymes and the bicarbonate and with the bile, which aids in the absorption of fat, and proteins are also digested here. If protein digestion is incomplete due to insufficient pancreatic enzyme production, kind of a putrefaction will occur, which will produce indole or scatol, which are absorbed into the blood and then cause some kind of cellular toxicity. The jejunum and ileum are specialized for specific nutrient absorption through little finger-like projections called microvilli or villi. They're finger-like projections into the small intestine that absorb nutrients into the blood and into the lymphatic system. The indole and scatol can attack the gut mucosa and create what's called a leaky gut syndrome here. Basically, 90% of all of our fluid is absorbed here in the small intestine. It's a significant part of the process of digestion, and if the enzymatic process is out of balance, the small intestine can't do its job. Some of the issues surrounding imbalance in the small intestine are important to be aware of. One of the things not listed here that I'll mention first is that the lymphatic part of the small intestines, some people believe that that imbalance in the lymphatic tissue in the small intestine creates an environment that contributes to narcolepsy. Other things that we'd look for are malabsorption and not getting all the nutrients that we need out of our food would be a focus to address here. An imbalance in the small intestine could lead to indigestion. Food allergies that aren't addressed can create problems on both sides, and that can result in pain and discomfort, bloating of different kinds, diarrhea. It also can create asthma. So the food allergies need to be addressed. When you're balancing foods, it would be important to make sure they balance on either the large or small intestine where they're absorbed. An imbalance in the small intestine can create a tenderness or a sensitivity, a diarrhea, and other gastrointestinal problems. Most often, the body here is imbalanced, it will respond to an imbalance in the pancreas or the gallbladder, the stomach, the liver all influence the small intestine. And stress and its related factors have an influence on the small intestine. Let me just make a note here that milk is not the small intestine's friend. Cow's milk is great for calcium for baby cows, and if there's a significant problem in the small intestine and no other allergies are known, eliminate dairy and see what happens. But that can be a significant contributing factor to some of the problems that imbalance the small intestine. The large intestine is the next organ that we want to address. It's significantly long. It's about 5 feet long. It doesn't have the villi or microvilli that the small intestine does to move along feet. And primarily, its job is to hold fecal material together, and then it has a main function of absorption of water, sodium, and various vitamins and minerals. By removing about 90% of the fluid from the digestive matter, the large intestine converts about 2,000 cc's of what is called chyme that enters into it every day from the ileum to about 200 cc's to semi-solid feces. Some of the vitamins that are synthesized by large numbers of bacteria that grow in the colon. Bowel flora here is very significant, and we want to talk a little bit about that. The distal half of the colon is concerned with storage and expulsion of feces. Distal half meaning the tail end. A great deal of mucus is secreted by the cells in the wall of the large intestine, and this is to hold the fecal matter material together and keep it moving. And it also provides protection for the intestinal walls from the great amount of the bacteria activity that occurs within the feces, and particularly the acidic byproducts of bacterial metabolism. The bacteria contributes to the production of B1s, B2s, B12s, and vitamin K, although B12 is absorbed also in the intrinsic factor. 80% of what is sent through the large intestine is reabsorbed by the body. A significant number of symptoms can occur here if there's dysfunctions, and we want to address those next. With an imbalance in the large intestine, watch for a number of significant conditions: irritable bowel syndrome, alternating with diarrhea, and constipation can be significant. A generalized tenderness of the abdomen can be an important part of the process to be aware of. Chronic constipation, hard or very painful stools are expressions of that. Hemorrhoids are an important part, but they come generally as a result of constipation. Some of the emotions tied to the large intestine include grief and sadness. Other things to look at would be skin infections and gallstones, appendicitis, colitis, diverticulitis, and diverticulosis. These things can all be indications that the large intestine is not working well, but it gets most of being at the distal end of the digestive process, the tail end of it. Some of the imbalances that occur ahead of time in other organs and tissues of the digestive system would create problems in the large intestine. Basically, diet is the key. Addressing the foods, which is why on our master list, foods are at the top of the list. Many of these imbalances in the large intestine can be addressed if the diet is properly balanced and good nutrition is followed. In the evaluations on the occlusion system, again, our list has another couple of things that we want to look at. Bowel flora is listed in the digestive list, the valve of Houston, and the micelle balance. The bowel flora is a significant process relative to enzymes, good and bad bacteria, pathogenic yeasts, essential fatty acids. All of those things are taken into consideration in the evaluation of bowel flora. It's important for proper digestion, and you can see that it's also got a place on the immune system list. In addition to that, we have the valve of Houston, which is just above the anal canal. The valve of Houston will respond to pressures from constipation or diarrhea or hemorrhoids. It has a role to play somewhat in parasites and parasitic involvement. The micelle balance below the large intestine is the capacity of the large intestine's absorption of vitamins and minerals, and has a role to play in telling us how well we're absorbing what we're eating and taking in. On the immune system, we've addressed most of the subjects that are identified there. The skin and condition of the skin is important because it tells us, in a sense, how well other organs and tissues of the body are doing. The tonsils and adenoids and appendix are a part of the lymphatic process we're going to talk about in just a minute. And the bone marrow is tied to the spleen and the spleen process. It's also tied to the immune response and how the body's endocrine system contributes to blood and blood production. And so that won't be addressed directly. It's a response from a number of other processes. And at this point in time, we're going to talk about the lymphatic and lymphatic system. But I want you to note that the tonsils, adenoids, and appendix are part of our immune system, and they're also part of our lymphatic system. So in evaluating the overall immune response of the body, be aware that those organs are vital to maintaining our immune response. The lymphatic system is an important part of our evaluation. The capacity of the lymphatic system to be our first line of defense and clear out certain toxins and other processes in the body is extremely important. We have twice as much lymph tissue as we do blood, and twice as many lymph vessels as we do blood vessels. The lymph system is extremely important to keep balanced and open and functioning properly. It filters out all the bacteria and disease producing processes. And another thing that's important that we mentioned just a little bit in digestion, but the lymph tissue has a role to play in the digestion of fats. And oftentimes when there's an imbalance there, we forget to look at how well the lymphatic process is working. And it has a role to play in our, significantly in our immune response. The lymphatic system is an accessory route to, by which all the fluids can flow from the interstitial spaces into the blood. Most importantly, the lymphatics carry proteins and large particulate matter that escapes through the capillary walls as a result of forward pressure of the arterial system. It's the removal of these proteins from this interstitial spaces that's absolutely essential to function, because if that didn't occur, an individual would die within 24 hours. After an injury, areas that are impacted, it starts swelling, and the lymphatic system is there to remove most of the excess fluid and putting back into the circulatory system its channel of lymph vessels, which ultimately empty into the bloodstream via the thoracic duct in the chest. Lymph processes are extremely important to keep well balanced, open, and functioning properly. Relative to that, the tonsils, adenoids, and appendix in the lymphatic system are keys to our immune response. Significant studies have been done that show that if those have been eliminated, the immune system has been debilitated in some way. A study of 100 people in America and 100 people in Germany that had the HIV virus, the ones that had retained their tonsils, adenoids, and appendix were more successful in combating the AIDS virus than those that had lost either the tonsils, adenoids, or appendix. It would also be important to note that if somebody's lost their tonsils and adenoids, that their appendix might be at risk, and it's a real common occurrence, because the lymphatic tissue that takes up a part of what the tonsils and adenoids do occurs in the appendix. We'll take a look at some of the symptoms in the process. Some of the significant things that are associated with lymphatic dysfunction: frequent upper respiratory infections, sinus congestion and infections, tender lymph nodes in the neck, groin, or under the arms, persistent swelling after an injury, and red streaks or swelling after a cut or injury. It should be noted that if the tonsils have been removed and the adenoids have been removed, that the lymph system is probably compromised some way, and the body should help be supported in restoring the process of the lymphatic function if the tonsils have been removed. There are some specific homeopathic remedies that would be used for this process to try. You don't go back and put the lymph tissue back in, but you should stimulate the meridian significantly enough that even though the tonsils have been removed, that the body's lymph system is properly performing its duties. And relative to that process, it would be important to address also the appendix at this time if it's been removed, because they become significant players in our first line of defense in the lymphatic function and lymphatic process. So restoring the lymph tissue to its proper functions is important. Chronic sinus pain, chronic tonsillitis, chronic sinusitis, ear infections, all those things can be other expressions of a lymphatic system that has been compromised and must be restored. In our advanced training on protocols, we specifically focus on opening the lymphatic tissue and making sure that it's balanced from the top to the bottom of the processes of the body. As we come back to our main list and looking in the lymphatic area, we want to be aware of a couple of other things. The cervical nodes are in the cervical vertebrae in the back and neck of the body. Sentinel nodes are just below those in the neck and shoulder area of the body. Axillary nodes are underneath the arm in the armpits. The right lymph drainage duct is on, of course, the right side of the body. Skipping down a bit, the thoracic duct is then the lymph drainage process for the rest of the body. The abdominal drainage, inguinal nodes, cisterna chili is a bowel lymphatic process, and then the peripheral lymphatics relative to points behind the knees, elbows, and other places where we have lymph tissue are all areas that need to be balanced and addressed. Making a point about the tonsils and adenoids being surgically removed, oftentimes if you work with chiropractors, you'll find them working with people that try to eliminate neck problems all the time. A lot of times this is a lymphatic problem. An imbalance of the lymphatic tissue or the missing tonsils can create a maladjustment in the cervical vertebrae. And I've had many chiropractors say that once we established a balance and got the lymph functioning properly, then the cervical adjustments on the cervical vertebrae would hold much more clearly. Another thing to be aware of in this regard is that the cervical vertebrae in people that have lost their tonsils, as the body tries to compensate for it structurally, it loses its natural curvature in the neck. So those are some things about lymphatic and lymphatic drainage that's important to know. The next organ we want to address is the spleen. It's about the size of the heart and is located just under the left rib cage, kind of next to the stomach. One of its main functions is to serve as a blood reservoir. It produces antibodies and neutrophils and forms the blood while working with the lymph tissue, the thymus, and bone marrow. It can release up to 100 cc's of blood into the circulation, half of which is composed of red blood cells. In other areas of the spleen, white blood cells are formed. These are the neutrophils that are in a fashion to similar to what the lymph nodes do. And these specific lymphocytes and plasma cells function in a manner to their lymphatic counterparts, causing either humoral or cellular immunity to foreign substances. Blood passing through the spleen undergoes a squeezing process, kind of due to the small diameter of the splenic capillaries. And fragile blood cells cannot withstand the trauma, so many of them find their demise in the spleen at the end of their 120-day lifespan. The spleen also contains a large phagocyte reticuloendothelial cells. That's part of the lymphatic process, and these cells act as a cleansing system for the blood. And the blood is invaded by infectious agents. These cells rapidly remove the debris, the bacteria, parasites, and other things. It's a significant organ in terms of its contribution to the lymphatics and immune response. If the spleen's out of balance, it's important to be aware of some of the things that can occur. Since it filters bacteria and parasites, be aware of parasitic infections can create an imbalance there. There can be pressure in the upper left abdominal part of the body. Anemia can be an expression of an imbalance in the spleen. The spleen can become enlarged due to the blood that it controls and infectious agents that influence it, or the lymphatic system dumping things into it. It's also tied to emotions of worry, sympathy, and obsession. There's elements of that stressful piece that create hypoadrenia that can imbalance the spleen. A soapy taste in the mouth can be an expression of spleen imbalance. Frequent sore throats and other constant infections are important to look at the spleen for that balance. And lupus is tied to the spleen. There's a significant relationship between hormonal processes in the Chinese model of medicine and and female fertility. Oftentimes, a woman that can't get pregnant has an imbalance in the spleen. The lung is the next organ that we want to address. The lung is responsible for oxygenating the blood and removing carbon dioxide from the body. It has about 250 million air sacs called alveoli. that are responsible for this process. It does it at about the rate of 16 breaths per minute. The oxygen diffuses from the alveoli into the blood, where it is returned to the left side of the heart to be pumped into the tissues of the body. And carbon dioxide is produced from metabolism of glucose, and its removal from the body through the lungs is responsible for the acute maintenance of acid-base balance within the body. An infection of the lung is called pneumonia, as opposed to an infection of the airways, which is called bronchitis. And asthma is a constriction of the airways of the lung. People who are not in athletic condition who begin aerobic workouts may initially find an energetic stress in the lung. Some of the problems that come to the lung are a result of inhaled toxins. It's the lung's responsibility, in a sense, to eliminate some of those. They get passed on to the liver, but the air pollution, pesticides, and herbicides can all create problems. Significant imbalances to the lung will be discussed next. If the lung is out of balance, some of these things may be present and would be important to look for. Pleurisy, which is a pain in the chest, a type of cough, shortness of breath after exercising. These can all be related to lung problems. The infection of the lung and then infection of the airways we've talked about. And emotions tied to this organ are grief and loss. It's a perfect example of how the body can die from toxicity if the toxin from the lungs is not eliminated properly. Try rebreathing the carbon dioxide and you realize that the concept of toxicity necessary for wellness has to be eliminated. We'll talk some more about the Chinese model of medicine and how it relates to the lung. Last but not least, the organ we want to talk about here is central to all this focus. It's the heart. It's basic to life and our circulation of blood. It does about 7,000 quarts of blood a day. Has 60,000 miles of blood vessels to address, and in our lifetime will pump about 2.5 billion times. It has been estimated that over half of the population shows hardening of the arteries by the age of 18. So the heart is a significant organ to help protect. Each year there are over 1 million deaths associated with heart and heart disease. The heart is a muscle and it responds to exercise. So we want to encourage that we exercise on a regular basis. It's also important to have good nutrition relative to the exercise.